Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The show is about to begin.
Welcome to the podcast, Conscience That Made Us. Interviews and stories, tales from the bus. We love taking you back to when it all went down. The greatest live shows and that cheering crowd sound. It's Concerts, Concerts That Made Us, ConcertsThatMadeUs.com.
This is Alan Griffith from Changing the Design, and you're listening to Concerts That Made Us.
Breathing in my passion transfused. Alan, welcome to Concerts That Made Us.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
It's great to have you now. I'm looking forward to diving into your music. Now, Changing the Design has a pretty interesting approach to music. You kind of use it as a conduit to reach people on a deeper level. Take us a bit deeper into that.
Yeah, so I'm a multi-instrumentalist, and I've learned to connect to music through playing different instruments. And I definitely put a lot of effort into trying to have it come across to the listener as an emotional journey with that.
Something I've always wondered about multi-instrumentalists is, where does it come from? Is it a boredom? Is it a curiosity? What makes someone stop one instrument and pick up another?
That's a good question. With me, I was a drummer for a really long time. I dabbled in guitar. When I was a kid, I used to hold one next to me and it felt really good, like an acoustic guitar, the resonance of it. No single instrument was checking all the boxes of how I wanted to feel when I was playing. So it's more of the emotional part of it. It's like guitar says something that I can't say, and drums say something that I can't say in words. And putting them all together, then I actually feel like, okay, now I can talk about my summed experience this way. But it wasn't easy learning all of the things to say what I want to say. But I knew that was kind of, you know, drumming for 15 years. I'm like, it doesn't feel the way I want to feel, you know, like.
Yeah, it doesn't scratch the itch.
Yeah, exactly. So I wouldn't say it's boredom, really. You know, my musical journey is just, I can't find anything else that I connect so much with that I find in everything. So yeah, not boredom, just maybe a little craziness.
I like it. And I'd love to dive into how you approach writing then. I'd say it's a very interesting process.
I start with a feeling. I'll be going somewhere, I'll be going through something, and I'm like, you know, I have a lot of feelings all at once. And that's normally when I start the writing process. And normally the way that goes is I'll have the guitar next to me, like when I was a kid. And I'm like, this feels a little bit like, you know, the resonation of the notes I'm playing. It feels kind of like how I'm feeling inside. My emotional pieces are connecting to that. And then once I have like a guitar riff, most of everything falls into place. So drums will come in, bass, and I'll write it all in my head, basically. And once I have enough to kind of set up shop and start recording, most of it's built in my head first. And a lot of it is, I'll have different renditions of it too. So it's like, well, I don't want the kicks to do this, but we'll try this way and this way and this way. And I'll kind of put it in my mental Rolodex to come out in the recording process. But then once that's laid out, then I refine it inside of recording, because I can do anything I want. You know, in my head, I'm like, I only have so much storage in here. And I'm like, okay, we finally have this. So now I can do what I want. I can add this kick here. I can play this. I can add bass here, the synthesizers, and, you know, vocals come last with that. And then I just try my best to talk about that journey vocally, what I'm saying musically.
That's right. And your last release, Soul Dissection Experiment, you had a pretty amazing team behind that record. I mean, they've worked with Tool, Metallica, Ozzy. How did you get that team, and what was it like to be in such good hands?
Yeah, that was an amazing situation that happened. So Tom Gordon, who is with Ozzy and Dr. Dre, and currently he's with Whitesnake. But he's been a longtime friend. We've worked at the same recording studio for a really long time, but we've just been through so much together that he recorded the whole last album. He was the producer. This one we did a little bit different. So I tracked myself, and then we went to Tom for tracking vocals. And then we went to Sylvia Massey for mixing. And that one was just a cold call. I'm like, you know what? This particular journey was really important to me to get it right. to try and capture what I have, because this is a long story short, I lost the ability to sing for 5 years, and this was coming back off of that. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to sing. I didn't know what this process was going to look like, because I basically, if I can't sing to finish off the project, if I can't finish off the songs, I don't even know how to think about them. So I kind of like, I gave up on trying to be musical for a while because I couldn't get the vocals together. And was ENTs, a lot of doctors and stuff. And I finally went to a speech pathologist, and she recommended this thing called strophination. And it strengthened my muscles again and got me to remember what it was like to articulate vocals in that way. And that was an incredible piece, but I didn't know what was going to come from this. I had no idea, but I'm like, I just can't not be a musician. This is terrible. This is the worst thing ever. So anyway, coming off of that, I'm like, I feel like whatever that journey was the right thing for me at the time. And I liked the product that was coming out of it. And I'm like, I'm going to see what I can do with people that I really idolize or love, you know? So, and Sylvia was a big part of that. So they heard some of the demos and they were like, all right, let's do it. And so I went up to Oregon and then mixed with Sylvia. And that was a super fun experience. Just, she's such a great person. And her manager, Chris, is a great person too. So they were just an incredible experience. And then Ruben was a recommendation. Actually, Larson was a recommendation from Sylvia. She's like, we've always wanted to work with these guys. You know, why don't you go that route or try? Because Sylvia is starting to do immersive mixing and stuff. And they were talking to Larson about immersive and it's pretty serious. but anyway, that's how I got a hold of Ruben. I just called it and I'm like, hey, this was a recommendation from Sylvia. What do you think? And he's like, let's do it. And this was like still in the middle, well, I guess a little post pandemic when it came to that. I think that was in late 2020. When we were doing that, and I think I was the first client back inside of the studio with Larson. So it was pretty serious.
I'd say so.
But Ruben is an amazing person to work with as well. He knows exactly what he wants, and then he can listen to what you're saying and then blend the two to get the best of the product. So it was such an awesome experience with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I could imagine. I have to ask, when you lost the ability to sing, did you ever think about maybe stepping away from the vocals, getting someone else to sing and you'd play the instruments?
Yes, I did try that because unfortunately this happened right after I released the previous album. So it was a huge blow. And I'm like, you know what? Show's got to go on. You know, I was like, this is going to happen. And it didn't happen. I auditioned vocalists. It's really hard to keep people in a role to where they didn't write the material. To be honest, I had a lot of people not show up for me. Nice. So yeah. So that was a big part of the process of me just being like, maybe I'm being told something, you know, maybe this is saying that I'm done, you know. Yeah. Like I can't articulate this in a way that makes sense to me. And you know, I had a lot of good vocalists that wanted to try and ended up just falling through each time. So it was that was rough. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. And how did that time period then reflect in your lyrics?
Pretty much this whole album is, I would say probably 7 of the songs out of this album is about that journey and the journey back. Why do I play music? Why do I feel these feelings? And why is music the only way that I feel like I'm articulating myself correctly in the world? You know, and it was kind of, you know, existential crisis situation. You know, but a lot of the album is about that. And but it actually helped me understand myself a lot more as an artist. The way I think about things, you know, before it was just like, well, I'm just a musician and stuff. I'm a pretty deep thinker with every movement that happens. You know, I overanalyze things or hyperanalyze things, and I don't tend to focus on like the event. I focus on the events between the events, you know? Right. So it's like when I look at something, I'm looking in between instead of looking at the focal point, you know? But yeah, a lot of these songs are about the journey back. You could pick any title and I could tell you about that. So it's, yeah.
I have to ask something that struck me. You're one of the few musicians I've spoke to who, you know, feels it so deeply. And I know every musician, music, their career means a lot to them. But for you, it seems like it's at an ultra, you know, level. Where's your happy place when it comes to your career? You know, do you want to, obviously you want to make it to the very top, but where would you be happy?
I would be happy when I can, at a place where I can remember to have fun. That's, nice. You know, it's not a, I guess in a little bit, it's a money thing because I just want to keep it going. You know, I don't want to have to worry about how I'm going to do the next move. I don't want to worry about those things. So I would say that I would feel more happy when it comes to, I would like to do what I want to, you know, because this doesn't stop at music. It's videos too, because I want to do short films to the songs because it's another way of articulating that thing, you know, another way of people possibly connecting to you, connecting to your emotions, connecting to your process. So, yeah, I would say I'm very happy when I'm playing live, and that's probably where I'm happiest with it, but I'm more content when I'm writing. So happy and content are different to me. Like when I'm writing, I have 1,000 things that I can do, you know, and when you're playing live, you have that focal point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you. Nice segue as well, because I'm going to ask you some concert-related questions now next. First off, I'll start off easy. As a concert goer, what concerts have made you?
Oh, I would say almost every concert that I've seen has definitely been a piece of my current being. I would say my first concert was Van Halen. And that was when they were touring with Vince Neil. So this was with Hagar. And the place that I saw this at is an incredible venue. It's in Park City, Utah.
Right.
And it's an outside venue. And there's something about that place that has incredible shows. And I think people have better shows there. I think their energy is better. It was incredible. So to see all of these people, you know, I would say my first show was probably my most important because I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't know how I was going to receive it. I was still really young. I think it was 10, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. And it was like watching all of these people find these musicians, like they all showed up for them. You know, like they all had their back and they were having this conversation that was unspoken. And, you know, so I would say my first concert was probably the biggest builder in that. Not that I was like the biggest fans, but it was amazing. And same venue. It's funny. There are Utah venues that get me. And so there was another one. I saw Metallica with Suicidal Tendencies. And that was when Candlebox had opened for them because it was supposed to be Alice in Chains. And then unfortunately, Lane had passed. But I saw Candlebox, you know, like Metallica obviously is amazing and it was a whole other thing. But I saw Candlebox when they were, I don't want to say they were a smaller band at that point, but their live show during that thing, it was like they had upped the ante. That was an amazing show. And it was raw, it was powerful. And I was like, I did not expect that from Candlebox
yeah.
during that time. And they blew me away. So I would say that was another one. But each show that I've seen really has been incredible. Here's a weird one. Live sound wise, undefeated is the band Jackal.
Right.
Live sound, I've seen them in a few different club venues. Like, I don't know, this was mid, I don't even know, 1995, maybe something like that. And I've never, to this day, I've never heard anything that large sounding. And I don't know but I was just like, this is what I didn't want to sound like Jackal, but their sound was so huge. I was like, that was impactful.
Yeah.
But I'm still speaking about it today.
Oh man. Here's a weird one for you now. For any fans of your music, is there a concert you've attended that would shock or surprise them?
Ooh. I have been to some strange things. I'm trying to. There was a Dillinger Escape Plan show that was a little strange.
Right.
You know what? Pass. I'll get back to you on that one. Let me ruminate on that one, because I have some strange. There's a couple that I can't talk about. I was living in LA and there were some weird circumstantial things and a couple shows out of it. So.
Right, I get you. And you know, what impact has your local scene had on your sound, and would you say?
I would say I'm here in Reno right now. So I'm a transplant. I've been here for maybe like 20 years. And I can't say there's a lot from the local scene that has gone into my tool bag, other than there are a lot of good, amazing players here that I do look up to. There are a lot of great guitar players, a lot of great drummers, great singers. And when I go to their shows, I would say the energy that they put forth, still trying to, you know, Reno is a kind of a breakout town. People are still trying to get out of here to go somewhere else. It's a cool proving ground, but it's really hard to get up to a large level.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting, but still seeing people that I know are amazing and could basically do anything. They could write their own ticket. I can go and watch almost any night of the week. I could go watch them play. And that's inspirational, because they could do anything they want. And I, you know, I don't know why they stay, but I'm happy that they did, so I could see them.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it, all right. Yeah. And the moment we're waiting for any listeners that haven't caught one of your live shows, what are they like? Lay it all out for us.
Okay, so expect a lot of sweat.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff pouring into my eyes. We tend to be a little heavier than we sound on streaming platforms and all of that. We tend to hit a little harder. It's a little more aggressive, but we try and make an individualized experience through a collective effort. So I like to have I'm a serious person live, little intense, but also I want to make sure that people feel loved,
right,
as well. You know, it's not like we're having these huge mosh pits or anything like that, but it's, you know, what we try and go for is like the steamroller effect. You know, it's like everything is so thick and big that it just keeps rolling over you, you know, with the thing. But I do try and connect with individual people, because I think it's so important to make sure that you find a connection with somebody. And they find a connection with you if they can. You know, I think that's really important. So when you're doing a large collective thing, I try and make sure that people have an individualized experience through it.
Right. And, you know, that's made me think of one. What is there a fan encounter that maybe sticks with you till this day?
yeah. So there was a band that I was touring with. and this has happened on two different occasions. So this goes to the personalized experience. There was one who, I might tear up thinking about it, but there was one who was not having a good time at a show. She was in the front row, and it was like she, was too nervous to be there or something like that. And I started playing the show, my show, to her, to like, I could tell she didn't feel safe. And I started, you know, making sure that maybe she felt a little safety through there. And long story short, through that, she came after that and said, thank you, you know, for basically saving me, because I was not having a good time. And she was a little suicidal at the time as well. God. And that had, it had impacted her so much that she felt loved in that moment. So that was probably the biggest one. Not silly, but that was a really big encounter and just part of that individualized experience that is so important.
Jeez, man. When something like that happens, though, it just shows you the power of your music. And it must also show you that you're on the right track.
Yeah, exactly. And just kind of me as a person, I do care about people. And I think that's something that I do, you know, I have in it my own process when it comes to writing the music and playing the music in the studio. But I love connecting with people outside of that. It's really important to me.
Yeah, I can see why. And, you know, out of all the gigs you've played, then, is there one that sticks out above the rest as maybe the highlight?
We've had some really cool shows. There was a show that we played. It's kind of when everything goes right, you know, it's like you show up and the fans are everybody. It's like you guys are all on the same page when you show up. There was a place called the New Oasis here in Reno. And I cannot remember. I think we were playing with like Lacuna Coil or something like that. But I don't remember. But everybody was on the same page and we showed up. And it was like the energy in the building was unlike anything that I've seen. I've played in front of a lot of people in certain situations. And this was just like palpable. You could feel everything. And it was like... I haven't had a show like that. It's almost like everybody took the same type of, they drank the same water that day and there was something in it, you know.
Yeah,
I would say that connection was probably the highlight, because it was just, you could feel, it's almost like you could feel the heartbeat of everybody. It was awesome.
How do you do the next show when that one is like that and so perfect? How do you do the next one?
You hope the next one goes just like that, you know, and you're chasing that one too. But, you know, I don't have a bad time at funky shows too, you know. It's all part of the experience. But yeah, you're always looking for that one that you're like, what is into you guys tonight? Holy, you know, how did you get on the same page with us? We're not even from here. Or yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, definitely. And to flip that around then, is there a gig that was maybe the worst and how did you overcome it?
I have a couple of those.
Okay.
So I would say for time's sake, probably the worst was, I don't know who booked the show, but we were playing with another friend's band and I believe this one was locally. I think this one was locally as well, but we went into this, it was like a bar, restaurant, grill type thing. And it has a bunch of, like gambling, not tables, but machines inside of the bar. Right. And when we showed up, I was like, did anybody promote for this? And we were just like opening for another band and like, we don't know.
Oh man,
I don't know. So we showed up and there were, I would say maybe like six people on the machines. There was like nobody there. And we started playing, and it was after the first, I would say, 10 notes, we knew that we were not playing the correct venue for us. We were way too heavy for the venue. The five or six people that were at the machines filtered out. Yeah. So we had cleared that. The five people, hey, they were just not expecting that. And the owner at the time, who there was somebody else who took that place over, and the other guy was a lot nicer, but the owner was like, "You guys got to shut it down." He's like, "You guys, like this is not what I signed up for." And I'm like, "You didn't sign up for like a rock concert?" He goes, "No, we thought it was going to be covers and all this other stuff, so we just had to stop playing."
Oh my god.
It was like, I'm like, I'm going to find this funny in the future. This is a funny scenario right now. And I was like super pissed at the time though. I'm like, you do your research before you book a band, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Exactly.
But I don't know who booked it, so I don't know what they were told either. So it might've been, I don't know whose fault that was, but yeah, clearing out five people and then just needing to stop after your first song was,
that's not like, the best.
Yeah. You get ready, bring all the gear.
Did you at least get paid? No.
No.
Oh.
No, they didn't pay us either. That one wasn't our gig. So the other band didn't get to play either.
Oh, and man.
I mean, they would have had the same issue. We were very close in the same genre. So.
Jeez.
Can you imagine? It was like, well, there's nobody here. We'll just play to the hole. Oh, we can't play to the hole. I see. The hole doesn't like us.
Oh man. And when it comes to showtime, then pre-show and post-show, how do you psych yourself up? And then afterwards, how do you wind down?
Oh, the psych up is tricky for me now because I have to warm up a lot vocally. So I'm kind of in my own place. I try and get somebody to work on my gear for me, setting my things up, because you know, since I lost the vocal thing, I'm warming up, and now vocal warmups, that gets me in a great headspace because I know that I know that I can sing, you know? Back in the day, it was a lot of beer, a lot of drinking and things, but I would say vocally now, when I'm doing vocal warmups, it's a bit of, I don't know, that regimen is close to me now. It's kind of like, I'm losing the word. Oh my gosh. Not yoga. What's the thing? Meditation. Yeah. It's like meditation, before. And then just, you know what? I love setting up too, though. So that's something that I need to think about in the future, because I love setting up gear. I love that part of the process. But cooling down, I would say same thing. Like vocally, I have to do a cool down as well. And that kind of brings me down. But also pulling the stuff off the stage, like in a hurry, if we're in front of another band, I like that process too. You know, I like to help other people get their gear. I don't know. I don't know that I'll ever lose that.
Right.
Yeah, it's something that keeps me feeling young, I guess.
I get you. And when it comes to being a musician, your career, everything, what's one thing you would change?
The vocal thing.
Okay.
There was a faster pathway to getting to sing, and I didn't take that path. Going to ENTs, the ears, nose, and throat doctors, they were doing the right thing by trying to treat me for a couple different things. It was like acid reflux or post nasal drip. But I wish that I would have seen a speech path at the same time, because we were treating something that it wasn't helping for months and months and months and months and months and months and months, and it didn't help. And the thing that helped me, you know, there was a much faster pathway to that. You know, the album I think is better for it. But I personally, that's one of the things that I wish.
Yeah, I getcha. when you think about the future, how would you like to evolve? Say, what would it be like, say, in 5 years' time?
I really want to be playing. I want shows to be in the bank when I look at the calendar. So just at any moment, be like, okay, this and this and this and this. I like to be in that frame of mind. Right now, it's still like there's so many things going on that is reliant upon me to make it happen, because, you know, it's this is my project. This is my baby. I would like for a little help with that, so then I can focus on being the musician side, you know, just like kind of focus on that rather than all of it. It's a lot. So I would like to do that. And I would say, you know, just more touring. I would enjoy that.
Mm. Yeah. Who wouldn't?
Yeah, exactly. So as far as albums, there's probably one pretty soon, maybe within a year, maybe a year and a half. It's percolating and you can't stop it for forever. So, we'll see what happens there. I'm curious on what comes out, you know. I don't know if I'm going to, yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Before we dive into the last couple of questions then, immediate future, is there anything set in stone with regards to gigs or anything?
Nothing set in stone right now. We are working on being a three piece right now. So everything's written for a 5-piece band, 2 guitar players, bass player, drummer, and myself. But now I'm taking on guitar and singing duties, and we're just trying to go as a 3-piece to see if we can get that collective oomph as a 3-piece, because it's so much easier. It's less to rely upon. And that's something that we're working on heavily right now. And I don't really want to add a ton of things to the calendar at this moment, so I can make sure that's going to be the way forward.
Right. I like it. How's it going then? Are you finding the oomph?
Yes. I'm a sound engineer, so there are things. The other thing that's weird is I have let go of some of my guitar amps. So normally I have a very thick, heavy, loud guitar tone through guitar amps. Many half stacks. But now I'm using a pedal, a Neural DSP Quad Cortex.
Right.
And I'm still futzing with it with captures of my guitar amps. So it's still my guitar amps. I'm still working on that to find a good blend with trying to get that oomph and like the difference between articulation and the oomph. You know, because with two, it's hard to beat. We'll probably end up with another guitar player. It's really hard to beat that, because not only sonically, you're just missing another person's guitar, you know, but you're also missing their playing too. Even if you're playing the same rhythm, it's a little bit off. So you get a chorusing effect that makes it sound a little bigger, little teeny bit out of tune from each other too, you know, and it just makes it sound bigger. So trust me, I'm trying to find ways around that too.
Right. I'm looking forward to seeing what you do. we'll dive into the last couple. So an easy one to start you off. What are you currently obsessed with? It can be anything at all.
I am obsessed with 80s movies.
Right.
I always have been, and currently still am. I've been watching these reviews of 80s movies, and I really wish I could remember the guy's name on YouTube, Jay something, but he's been reviewing these 80s movies. He'll play a clip and then he'll review the clip and then just kind of, you know, sum the movie and then review it. And it's spectacular. It's hilarious. He's just, I think his, can I swear? I think I already swore.
Yeah, we're good.
This is shit. That's one of his things.
Brutally
but I would say
then.
That's currently, yeah, that's currently. I think he's from the UK, but that's right. My thing now.
Right. I have to ask you then, what's your ultimate 80s movie?
Oh, Once Bitten. It's a, okay, so it's a vampire movie, and it was, I think it was Jim Carrey's first movie. If not his first movie, it was his close second movie, but it was basically him as, he might have been 18 in the movie, 19. I couldn't say a great age, but yeah, it's a vampire movie about this kid who is trying, he's in high school, he's trying to lose his virginity, and his girlfriend is, you know, sticking to her guns. So he goes out and finds somebody out on the town in Hollywood. And there's this amazing song called Once Bitten by this band called Three Speed that I'm obsessed with the song. I don't know why. Like, nostalgia is a killer for me. So, but anyway, it just, you know, hilarity ensues through that. And it's just a great movie. So I would say that's probably my favorite. Close second is Weird Science.
Yeah.
Which any given day they might be, you know,
flip-flopping.
Yeah. But if you know, any John Hughes film has got me.
Yeah.
So I watched a little understand. Bit of Breakfast Club last night too. So
yeah, I love that one. That's definitely up there for me.
What about you? I don't know if we have time, but what about you?
Favorite 80s movie. You know, I feel like you have to break it into genres. You know, like if it's action, it's probably something like Predator or the Stallone movie is a Cobra.
Yes.
Yes. Then horror would be The Lost Boys.
Oh, yeah. There.
You know, the best movie soundtrack ever. Yeah. You know, and comedy, I don't know, because it flip-flops a lot. And when it comes to comedy, I like finding these like unknown films that are completely forgotten from the 80s.
Yeah. You know? You might want to check out Once Bitten if you're... It's campy, but I mean, there's just funny stuff, but you know, it might just be my nostalgia to it that makes it amazing for me. But I would love to see how you do with that one.
I have a feeling I'd like it. I'll have to check it out. The next one. So if you had to spend 24 hours locked in a room with any musician from history, who would it be?
Danny Elfman.
Right.
That dude can't write bad things. And I would probably make him cry with the amount of questions that I would have about his whole musical journey, but scoring, like, to me, his movie scores are, I don't know, they invoke everything that I'm trying to portray as a musician. You know, they're not heavy or whatever, but they are emotionally, you know, so, you know, it's not like he's using baritone guitars or whatever, but whatever he writes almost every single time gets me nail on the head. So I would say, yeah. I don't know. I think it would just be a very weird night.
I like it. Good choice. And the final one. So what is your go-to album?
There are two go-tos that I have, but I would have to say Tybo Negative October Rust is my go-to because I can, you know, again, nostalgia. They really took a lot of chances with a lot of their sounds and the way they created a scene with everything they were doing. It helps me reset. It helps me re-immerse. But I would say that sometimes before shows, if I'm, I don't know, sometimes I'm not feeling it. And sometimes I'm like, okay, I need to kind of recenter. Maybe it was a messed up set up and the club owner's not a great guy or woman. But sometimes when I listen to Metallica, Nothing Else Matters, it centers me as well. Because when I was a kid, that was one of the songs that I got to see the musicians in the studio. I got to see, you know, like the box set was important to me as well. I learned a lot about recording. I learned that was my first recording session, you know, like I learned all about the stuff. So when I listen to it, I remember there's somebody else that's doing this and they've been doing it forever and they made me feel this way. And that's what I want to do for somebody else.
Perfect. Perfect. Listen, Alan, it's been an absolute blast. Now, I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Oh, same. I appreciate the chat, man.
Actually, you know what? Do you want to swing back to that question that about the concert?
Now that I'm thinking about the question, maybe it's not. Maybe you're not asking me what I thought you were asking me. So I have attended Kesha.
Okay.
Who else? There's another band. I love Huey Lewis in the News.
Okay.
So that was one. But I was going to tell you about an experience of a show that I had. There was a rock band playing. And it was, this was when I lived in LA. And there were, it was in a club that had glass ceiling. Yeah. And as the band was playing, there were people having relations in the glass ceiling. So you could look up and that was happening. And then also in some other glass enclosures, that was happening as well. So it was a very interesting experience.
Yeah, sounds like an interesting club, all right.
Yeah. If you're curious about that off air, I'll tell you.
Okay. That actually reminds me of that a scene in that movie Kiss Kiss Bang Bang with, yes, Robert Downey Jr.
That's funny. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna watch that. And I'm like, I don't remember the exact scenario that was, but I'm gonna look at it and who knows, maybe it's the same place.
Could be, could be. Listen, Alan, thanks a million. We'll have to do this again in the future.
Thanks again. I would love to.
Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify. And if you're interested in signing up the Band Builder Academy, use the link in the show notes below and enter the code CONCERTS and you'll receive 10% off. So, until next time, keep rocking.
Hey. Hey, what are you guys still doing here? The show's over. It's over. You can go home. Go on. We'll see you next time. We'll be here. Bye.